Czechast, a podcast in English about Czech and Moravian society, history, culture and economy.
Hello and welcome to Czechast, the podcast where we explain Czechia to the world. What kind of country is Czechia inside the European Union and NATO today? Is it a reliable partner, reluctant member, or something in between? And how much can a small Central European country really influence decisions made in Brussels? My guest today is Filip Nerad, a long-time foreign correspondent, EU analyst, and now a member of the Globsec Policy Institute team. After years spent in Brussels, Berlin and Prague, he offers a rare long-term view of how Czechia's position in Europe has changed. Here is how he sees Czechia today compared to where it was 15 years ago.
After the second EU presidency, I would say we are accepted in Brussels as reliable and constructive partner who can and is ready to negotiate, to come with its own proposals and solutions, and is able to build coalitions of like-minded countries.
Czech foreign policy is often discussed in terms of alliances, summits and strategy papers. But as Filip Nerad reminds us, Europe is also about everyday life and about understanding societies beyond official institutions. After years in Brussels, he found that some of the most important insights came not from EU meetings, but from Belgian pubs and beer, which inspired him to write a whole book on the subject.
The place where I met Belgians most commonly was a pub. And there's one popular saying in Belgium that the only things that hold the country together is the king, beer, and national football team, the so-called Red Devils. And I think that's true.
So grab a cup of tea or coffee if you are listening at home, or just keep your pace if you're out walking or jogging. Here is my interview with Filip Nerad.
Czechast, a podcast in English about all things Czech. Whether you're an English-speaking expat living in Czechia and Slovakia, or a descendant of the Czechs, Moravians and Slovaks who left for a better life in America, Australia, Britain or Canada so long ago that you don't speak the language of the old country, this podcast in English is for you.
Well, I spent 20 years in Czech public media, one decade in Czech news agency, among others as a correspondent in Germany, and one decade in Czech radio as your colleague in foreign department. And I was correspondent in Brussels and Benelux, head of foreign news desk, EU analyst, host of podcast Bruselské chlebíčky, or Brussels Bites, Bites, as we call it, and many other roles. Since last year, I've been communications director, head of Prague office, and analyst at the Globsec Policy Institute, which is the biggest think tank in Central Europe, with offices not only here in Prague, but also in Brussels, Washington DC, Bratislava, Vienna, Kiev. So really global organization. And we organize also the biggest annual international security conference in region, the Globsec Forum, here in Prague. So that's my working background. And when I'm not working, I'm running, cycling, watching American football, because I'm a big fan of Seattle Seahawks and proud member of a Czech and Slovak Seahawkers fan club. And last but not least, devote myself to beer and beer culture, in which I even receive a Belgian beer night order.
We will definitely get to that later on. But I think you omitted a little bit, maybe because you're a humble person, that you also headed the foreign news desk at Czech Radio. And I would like to, you know, mention that in the context that, as you mentioned, you reported from Brussels and Germany. Now you've got the job that you just described. With that kind of long view, how do you see Czechia's place in Europe today compared to what it was, say, 10 or 15 years ago? If there is a change, I don't know.
Yeah, I would say it's a fundamental change. You know, 15 years ago, it was a time of President Václav Klaus. we were perceived in EU as kind of curiosity, someone who wanted to be part of European Union but then heavily criticized it. It was shortly after the Czech EU presidency, the first EU presidency with the famous Entropa, which made fun of everyone in Europe, and with the fall of our government during it. 10 years ago, that was we were, on the other hand, I would say, absolute rejector of everything, together with other V4 countries, mainly in case of migration. So, again, totally different position. And now, after the second EU presidency, I would say we are accepted in Brussels as reliable and constructive partner who can and is ready to negotiate, to come with its own proposals and solutions, and is able to build coalitions of like-minded countries. Thanks to this, we ran successfully the presidency in 2022. It was in very difficult time, you remember it, and we were able to push through some reforms, such as in case of Euro 7 ecological standard or other car or climate related files. So, or in general, we help to accept nuclear energy as a part of green energy resources and so on. So, I would say it's a positive trend. Now we are accepted or viewed more positively now. If it changed somehow under current government, we'll see.
But the first signals, with Tomio Okamura being the Speaker of the House, Petr Matsinka being the Foreign Secretary, and they are definitely not politicians who would be kind of seen as pro-European, to put it mildly. Do you think that it will be, in the end, Prime Minister Babiš who will decide?
Well, we will see. Prime Minister Babiš says that he will be in charge of or control of Czech foreign policy. Of course, there is a Minister Matsinka as a foreign minister, but his role plays also President Petr Pavel. But as you mentioned, there are also others, mainly representatives of SPD and Motorist Party, who speak on foreign policy. So mainly on Ukraine. So I think it would be good that the Czech Republic will find one voice and one and the same line how to present our foreign policy, because now it might be a little bit confusing for our partners. Who is in charge? Who speaks? Because many of these declarations are contradictory, or these major players in the Czech Republic sometimes don't speak in the same way. So it will be good to unite this voice and to present one line, one view on the Czech foreign policy.
We quite often hear from representatives of small and medium-sized states in Europe that they are, you know, overruled, I suppose, in a way, naturally, in realpolitik, by big players like Germany and France, who, especially now after Brexit, have got a really kind of decisive voice in EU. Where do you think Czechia can realistically shape EU decisions, and where should we kind of maybe stop, you know, showing off in a way and pretending that we can change something, be it climate policies, etc., when realistically, probably, we will not be able to change that?
Well, we can shape every decision if we start with it in early or preparatory stage, if we get enough partners, countries, or MEPs on board, and if we are ready to accept compromise, because you never reach 100% of what you want. in EU, everything is compromise of 27 or some majority countries or majority of MEPs and so on. In the past, I think compromise was perceived as something bad or even vulgar world in the Czech society or Czech political landscape. But, well, actually, that's how EU works. And I think now we slowly realize it. These big players, as you mentioned them, of course, they have the biggest biggest influence, power, but even they can't push through anything without support of at least some small and medium-sized countries. And the same goes for them. If they want to push through their proposal, their idea, they need to have at least part of these big members on board, and then it is possible. So everything is a matter of negotiation and active diplomacy. And I think Czech Republic have learned it now and is able to use it now, contrary to what we were doing in the past.
You know, let me just remember slightly my time in Brussels back in 2006, 2007, quite a long time ago. It's going to be nearly 20 years. And at that time, Jan Kohout, the Czech representative, privately quite often complained exactly what you mentioned. I mean, the kind of unpredictability of the then government. You know, I'm talking about the governments of Mirek Topolánek and even Mr. Paroubek before him. So if I were to kind of sum it up, this kind of European part of the interview, Czechia went from unpredictability to predictability and cooperation, constructive cooperation within the EU. And now we are kind of slightly maybe at the crossroads. Is that a fair way of summing it up?
Yeah, I would say you're right, because the government have changed. There's a new position towards EU, towards NATO. Slightly, little bit critical. I mean, towards EU, more, let's say, nationalistic approach. And but on the other hand, the new government confirmed that she and the Czech Republic should stay part of EU, NATO, and there will be no change in this. So yeah, there will be a slightly different approach that our partners should take into account and deal with it. Our role in EU and maybe in NATO will be slightly different than under the previous government.
Just one more kind of memory from Brussels. And actually later on from Poland as well. What I noticed is the national politicians quite often come to Brussels, they agree with something, make no big mess when negotiating something, and then they come back home and, you know, they present themselves, we didn't want to do it, what is the Brussels doing, etc. Is it something that still you see?
Well, I would say it's already a habit, and not only in Czechia, as you mentioned, but all over Europe. Even in Belgium, many politicians blame Brussels for unpopular decisions, even though it is not something far away as for us. So all politicians in Europe do that, because it's the easiest way how to try not to be related to something that is criticized at home, or they can't, or even are not willing to explain to their voters. So, but as both of us know, nothing in the EU is agreed without participation of Czech ministers, Czech MEPs. So, I would say, that's something which is very common, and of course there is I would say, one more level of this when we approve some directive at home and we approve it much more complex or tougher than it needed to be. So that's also very common, and then we blame Brussels, even though it's a fault of our own MPs here in Prague.
That's true. That's actually what I remember, even just after the entry of the into EU, and even before, actually. Some new regulation would be kind of legislated in Czechia or would be, you know, put into practice. And they would say it's from the Brussels. They want it from the Brussels. And then you find out that actually it's not the Brussels. It's the Czech authorities kind of translating or interpreting the EU legislation in a much more strict way than it's totally necessary. And I just wondered, in your during your career, which spanned, as we mentioned, you know, two decades, have you seen shifting views of the general Czech population towards the EU? And I'm not talking, of course, we can always look at polls, you know, and it's easy to sum it up on the polls. But I think there's more to it than polls. Would you agree? And have you seen some shifts?
Yeah, definitely. We both remember times when we entered the EU, 2004. There was enthusiasm. We were back in the Europe. That was the goal of the Velvet Revolution, or the goal of the 90s, to get back to Europe. We were there. And we were totally happy to be in there. We approved it in a referenda a year before. But then slightly we were satisfied with being there. And we did nothing or very few to use this privilege, let's call it. And the Eurosceptical voices, I mentioned here President Václav Klaus of that time, that were more louder than the voices of people who supported the membership or would support the euro currency. And that was the crucial time, in my opinion, when we started to become more Eurosceptical. And in the end, we became most Eurosceptical, one of the most Eurosceptical nations in current EU, even though it brings us many benefits. But not everyone here in Czechia is able to use these benefits and rather listen to these Eurosceptical or Eurocritical voices. And of course the migration crisis 2015-2016 cemented this bad view of EU, of someone who dictate us that we should take some migrants and so on. And so this this Eurosceptical view became very strong, and since then the polls haven't develop a growth much more. So we are still one of the most skeptical, and I'm afraid there needs to be a generation change. The new generation, the young people who use all these benefits of being member of a free movement area and so on, that they will perceive the EU much more positive. Currently it doesn't seem, and we can see it on the stance towards the EU euro currency, that still only about one quarter of population is ready to have a common currency. And the rest of the population is afraid of it and doesn't want to keep our own crown, and even though there are not much benefits.
Exactly, and all the businesses, the Czech Association of Industry and Transport, Czech Chamber of Commerce, all the big business organizations support euro, and still the population is not persuaded about that, or is not convinced that it would be a good thing. Do you think we will, the two of us will live to see euro in Czechia? Just, you know, what is your estimate?
I hope so, but when I was in Czech Radio, and as I mentioned, I was host of the podcast on EU affairs, Bruselské chlebíčky, or the Brussels Bites, and one of the guests told us then that we will accept a euro when we will be desperate. So very last one in the EU, that there will be no other option than to do it. So we will see when this moment will come, but I still hope that I will be the one who will pay regularly here in the Czech Republic with the euro. But it doesn't seem it will be in any near future. This government said it very clearly. It's in their government declaration that they won't deal the euro issue anyhow. They don't want it, and so at least next 4 years will be definitely without it and without any move towards this goal.
Let me go back to what you mentioned before. You talked about the need for generational change, or that perhaps there will be generational change in the view towards Europe. And allow me to say proudly, I'm a father of two young people, and my daughter, who's 18 now, is actually in Strasbourg today, visiting European Parliament with her secondary or high school. And my son started his doctorate studies in Leuven at the Catholic University. And I know a lot of people, young people like that, who really go to Europe. I don't know how often you are in touch with the younger generation, but I've also heard some complaints from academics that even though young people have got Erasmus, I mean, this great exchange program, that sometimes at some places, some universities, that it's difficult to persuade the young Czech people to participate. Have you got any insight into that?
To be honest, not. I'm father also of two young people, but definitely younger than yours. I have 16 and 12 years, and for them, they don't know anything like border, and we were now surprised several times because there are these checkers on the borders between Czechia and Germany, or Germany and Poland, who are checking or controlling the illegal migration. And sometimes we were stopped and search in the way that they look inside the car, see normal people and let us go. But there was something totally new for them, because they were used to travel totally freely. When we go to Berlin or to Brussels, no one stopped us on the road ever. And now there's something that we both know from old times.
But yes, exactly. Before Schengen, my son actually got quite angry with Germany that they reinstated that, and he he was saying, you know, that it's not legal. But I had to explain it to him. Yeah, right, you are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, but I don't know about this. As far as I know, Erasmus is one of the most successful European programs. It's said that more than 1 million of children were born thanks to this exchange program, that the people who were traveling, studying all over Europe can meet new people and also starting families. But that's, let's say, the secondary result of this program. But definitely, that's something that that helps, that widen your horizons, and that you can meet people that you wouldn't meet in any way. You can learn to know foreign cultures, and that helps against some kind of xenophobia, because especially for us Czechs, and we know it both, some people, or the Czechs, are not a big fans of foreign elements, let's call it very mildly. And when you live at least for some times abroad, that helps you to to get know the foreign country, to understand it, and not to be suspicious or whatever. So yeah, I think it's a good thing, and I hope it will continue.
On a more kind of personal and I think very intriguing note, you've written extensively about Belgian beer culture. And after years in Brussels, what did Belgian pubs teach you about the society and some, you know, this kind of life in Belgium that the EU institutions could never teach you?
They taught me to know Belgians because you don't meet many Belgians in the EU institutions, at least among journalists. I don't know how it was during your times, but during my times, it was very international community from every corner of Europe, but very few Belgians were there. The same goes for my living in Brussels. I lived in Woluwe-Saint-Pierre, which is a part of Brussels where a lot of diplomats and EU officials live. For example, in the house where I lived, there were no Belgian families at all. So the place where I met Belgians most commonly was a pub. Many of these people were beer geeks or enthusiasts like me, of course. And many of them became my friends, and we are still in touch till nowadays. And what I have learned there is that even though there are many disputes between Walloons and Flemish, mainly in politics, and they are different also in their nature, sitting by the beer in the pub, they can be united. They have the same view on many things, no disputes among each other, or they swear on the same thing. So there's a one popular saying in Belgium that the only things that hold the country together is the king, beer, and national football team, the so-called Red Devils, and I think that's true.
You know, right you are. I actually remember when we stayed in Brussels, we, as you say, we mixed mostly with people from other countries. And I have to say that the only Belgian we got to know really well was Pani Bożecka. And let me explain. This was a Belgian woman, very nice lady, who married a Czech man back in the 1960s. And she lived in our house, and she grew fond of our son, who was a little boy then. And then we spent quite a few evenings with her. And she, honestly, I think she's the only Belgian that I met kind of in a more intimate way. I mean, in a family way. Yeah. But back to beer, because you wrote a book about that. I mean, just imagine that you are speaking to someone, let's say someone who grew up somewhere in the American Midwest. What's, of course, there are many different kinds of beer in Belgium. Are there perhaps some broad categories? How would you sum it up in a few sentences? I know it's cruel in a way for someone who spent so much time doing a very profound research, I believe. But if you were to sum it up in a few minutes, what's the beer culture in Belgium like?
Well, it's the most diverse and most colorful beer culture in the world, in tastes, in varieties of beer. You wouldn't find anywhere in the world so many different beers, beer aromas, varieties on such a small area as Belgium. You have to imagine Belgium, area of Belgium is an area of Moravia. So it's a very, very, very small area. You can drive through in 1.5-2 hours through all the country. But you literally find in each village different beer. And the beer are so distinctive. So there are acidic beers, strong sweet beers. Whatever you can imagine, you will find it. Very old historical tradition, which is aligned with churches, and so on. So it's a very kind of beer culture which really is worth of exploring and tasting, and I would recommend it to every beer lover here, not only here in the Czech Republic.
Let me just ask you, were you prepared to what you met in this respect in Belgium?
In some kind of, yeah, because I was a beer lover, and I hope I can describe myself as a beer connoisseur even before. But of course, it's a totally different level. As I said, there are so many different beers there, so that you can't explore it even when you live there for several years, as I did. So I bought at the very beginning, when I came to Brussels, a book which is called All the Belgian Beers. It has 1,400 pages. On every page is a different beer. And I noted there when I tasted the beer. When I left the country, I tasted around 500 of them. So even after several years, I haven't been in the half of the of this vast majority of beers. And of course, since then there are dozens and hundreds of new ones. So definitely it's a never-ending story and a never-ending effort to taste all of them, but at least I try.
I had to leave this subject, but I have just one more political question. Of course, we mentioned that we've got a relatively new government now. And when I spoke to our colleague, Kateřina Šafaříková, now of Seznam Zprávy, who also spent a long time in Brussels, she described the new government as Czech version of Trumpism, kind of populist, unpredictable, loose with facts. And I'm not going to tell you what I think about that, and what other people like Tomáš Klvaňa told me about that. What do you think? Do you think it's a fair judgment?
Well, most of it, yeah. But I would say it's predictable, definitely more than Donald Trump. In general approach to the foreign and EU policy, which is my area of interest, I think it does what it declared it will be doing. Yeah, I mean, the bigger focus on national interest, on Central Europe, especially on cooperation with Slovakia, not giving money to support Ukraine, staying part of the EU and NATO, but being more critical towards its politics or goals, trying to keep good relations with the US and Israel and so on. I think that's how Czech EU and foreign policy will look like, and our partners already know it and should take it into account, as I mentioned. If there has been any surprise, then a positive one, with keeping Czech Ammunition Initiative for Ukraine alive, in my opinion.
Finally, what, if anything, gives you hope that both Czechia and perhaps whole Europe, I mean European Union, will be able to navigate this present kind of stormy and unpredictable international situation? What would you say gives you hope, if anything?
My hope is, or my experience is, that EU performs best in crisis. In real hard times, it shows determination, ability to find quick solutions and unity, and to move forward in areas where it seemed to be impossible before. We could see it in the COVID crisis, then after a Russian invasion to Ukraine, during energy crisis, and in other cases. And that gives me hope that Europe will go through even these tough times as well, and hopefully come out stronger than before.
And Czechia as well.
And Czechia as well, yeah. Because we will stay part of the EU. I still believe it.
Okay, Filip. Well, thanks very much for your time, and I hope to see you soon.
Thank you very much for inviting me and having me in your podcast. It was a great pleasure, and yeah, I'm looking forward to seeing you soon as well.
That was Filip Nerad, analyst at the Globsec Policy Institute and my guest on Czechast. If you enjoyed this episode or any other episode of Czechast, please consider hitting the like button, following the podcast, or even better, recommending Czechast to a friend. It really helps to spread the word. And while you are at it, you may also want to visit radio.cz, where you will find many more news stories, interviews and features about Czechia in a European and global context. I'm Vít Pohanka. Thank you for listening. Stay safe, stay healthy and stay curious. And until next time, as we say in Czech, naslyšenou.
Czechast, a podcast in English about all things Czech. Whether you're an English-speaking expat living in Czechia and Slovakia, or a descendant of the Czechs, Moravians and Slovaks who left for a better life in America, Australia, Britain or Canada so long ago that you don't speak the language of the old country, this podcast in English is for you.